emergency conditions and the kind of funding available for public health. It should be absolutely unacceptable that thousands of people are dying due to a month-long FDA approval process when the FDA's officials approved stopping Paxlovid's trial early. It should be absolutely unacceptable that people are spreading COVID to others because the government refuses to facilitate easy access to at-home COVID tests. And it should be absolutely unacceptable for high-level government officials to muddle the terrible message that COVID is over as a medical emergency. COVID will never go away. We need to learn to live with it. That means reacting appropriately and thoughtfully to new variants and being intentional about our trade-offs.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us again on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. First and foremost, I'd like to apologize for my nasal voice. It's rain season and flus and colds are going around. Secondly, but more importantly, I'm joined by my special guest and darling sister, Sister Razia Shamri. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's so good to be here
with you after such a long time. We have a lot to talk about, some really interesting topics too. A little different from what we used to do. Some pragmatic, some trending stuff that a lot of women are dealing with. And of course, Muslim ladies are no exception to this matter. But what I understand from the little chat we had before the recording is that you intend on talking about the ever so fabulous topic of shopping.
Actually, shopping is something that whenever I myself, I feel really low in moods and I want to mood change, it's one of the options on my list.
Seriously?
It is.
It makes you feel better?
It makes me feel better.
It's your little pick-me-up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I see it in the women around me. It's something that my mom used to do. You know, when she was feeling very homesick, when we were not in Iran, when we were in Canada, the one thing that lifted her spirit, of the things, was to do shopping.
Get out.
No, seriously.
That is so cute.
And that is in the corner of my mind. Mm. It's been in the corner of my mind since my childhood. And I always wondered, what is it that women love to do shopping, even when their wardrobes are, you know, exploding from different kinds of clothes? What is it psychologically that women love to do shopping? And it's the remedy. Even I remember that some couples, when they have problem, arguments, spousal debates and discussions and
disagreements.
Yeah. One thing that the man can use, one strategy, is to take her shopping and to get her something, and then she'll feel better and then they will make up.
Seriously.
No, and this was always on my mind, and I thought, let's do research and find out, and let's see, to what extent we have to do it, to what extent is approved, Islamically speaking, and let's go a little deep down to the roots.
We're gonna put shopping under the Islamic microscope.
Yeah, also, at some point of our discussion, we're going to talk about that, too.
Okay.
So, should I start? You don't like shopping yourself?
No. I hate it so much.
Wow.
I hate it with passion. I hate it religiously.
So how do you do your shopping?
I shop maybe once a year. It's winter time. I need winter clothes. I need to change my boots every year because apparently my feet have teeth and they gnaw on my boots. Yeah, I just shop once a year, maybe twice a year. Winter time and summertime, that's it.
Wow. And do you do it with, like, you just take, grab the things that you want?
Yes, I go in, I grab, I come out.
Exactly the attitude of men.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that someone was doing a research. Actually, I was reading a short article called Why Women Love to Shop and Men Hate the Mall. I saw this as I was doing the research. I think it was CBS News Channel that had published this article. And this guy, this researcher who had gone on a winter vacation with his wife and the group, he said that when it was at one point in our trip, the men wanted to go sightseeing and the women wanted to go shopping. This happens a lot. In a lot of my trips also, we have this argument that men, like one day of the trip, like even if it's a 3-day trip, one day has to be allocated to shopping.
Shop for what?
I don't know. When you go somewhere, especially when you're traveling, you have to do the shopping. You have to go see like the fashion, the designs, you know, how of that country or of that city, you know, the culture.
But what does it matter? Would you not see, okay, the trend in the fashion you can see on the people wearing clothes in
no.
the streets, in the sights you will go to see.
No, that's
and the culture,
totally
and the
different.
The architecture and in the no. food and in the streets. And
yeah, yeah, all of them are also included. But then one specific part of the trip has to be dedicated to shopping. I'm very surprised that you're a woman and you're like so disagreeing with this whole idea.
This is Muslim Lady. We are talking about the fascinating topic of shopping and why women adore it, why it revives them, it brings them back to life, and why men, well, they're not very crazy about it. I'm joined by Sister Razia Shamili, and stay with us on this discussion.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So we're back, and we've been talking about shopping. I either need clothes, right?
Right.
Or I need, like, dust collectors for the house. And they're called dust collectors for a reason. Vases and, you know, things to put around the house and stuff like that. I don't like them. I don't understand the objective, and they're called dust collectors for a reason.
That
they
is
collect
so
dust,
true. That is
right?
so true.
Or you shop for clothes. And for clothes, it's just that, I mean, how much clothes can we possibly wear?
Never enough. Seriously. I open the wardrobes of the ladies in my family and relatives, and seriously, they're exploding. Maybe, you know, sometimes there are clothes lying there that are not even used once a year.
Exactly. Never mind the fact that you have to go through the trouble of calculating the khums on the
exactly. Do you have to? Well, if you wear it once a year, you don't have to calculate the khums, right? So that is exactly the purpose why, Islamically speaking, you are in numerous teachings of the Quran and in the ahadith that we have from the Noble Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, we are reminded constantly that you are here in this world for a short time, and let not the glitters of this world beguile you.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually reading a hadith from the Noble Prophet where he was talking to the different people in different ages. He said, 20-year-olds, strive and, you know, try to work hard in the second decade of your life. 30-year-olds, do this, 40, 50.
Interesting.
And at one point he said to the 30-year-olds, be careful not to let the glitters and glamour of this worldly life to beguile you.
Yeah, for sure.
And if you're looking at it from a capitalist perspective, you know, in this world that we're living, the whole purpose is to gain more profit. I mean, I'm talking from the point of view of the capitalist system, right? Mm. So they need to produce more and more every day.
Exactly.
They need more trends, more fashion, more style to be
exactly.
on
and
display.
They make commercials and ads, and they set trends in magazines
right.
and on the red carpets, and that just encourages consumerism for people to constantly feel that if I don't buy this, I'm either out of trend, or I'm not fashionable enough, or I'm lame, or I'm not in touch with, I'm not updated, up exactly. to date with what my peers are doing.
That is so true. And the other thing is that people's these days have become very superficial. And their eyes and their minds and their brains lie in what they see. And they don't like to go delve a little deeper into the layers of a person.
Women in Imam Khomeini's idea.
On the criterion of taqwa or piety, Imam Khomeini states, there is no difference existing between groups in Islam except in taqwa and fearing the obedience of the Almighty God. Imam Khomeini states on the subject of corruption, the benevolent spirit of the Prophet of God and the Immaculate Imams, alayhi salam, are in a state of anxiety and horror at the prospect of the leaves of the tree of the prophetic mission, wilayat, and guardianship falling and drying away. The Holy Prophet has remarked that marry in order to produce children. For verily, I take pride in you in relation with other nations, even if the child is aborted. This is from 40 hadiths that Imam Khomeini has quoted.
So we're back, and we've been talking about shopping.
Naturally, automatically, when you see someone for the first time, what attracts you to the person is the physical appearance of that person, what that person, how the style of that person, the hairstyle is, the beard style, the makeup, even the makeup, the colors that you use for your lipstick, for your shadow, the clothes that you wear, like even if you have piercing, tattoos these days are becoming so trendy. All these, I'm saying that people care about superficiality, and it's people are attracted so
much.
Yeah,
of course.
So it's not to be fall behind from the trendy stylish people. You are somehow forced.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, I believe it's Islamic as well. We have so many narrations about how the Imams alayhi salam dressed according to their time, right?
Sure, and to their position and prestige.
Exactly.
Remember?
It was cool for Amir al-Mu'mineen to dress in coarse clothes and eat dry, stale bread because the majority of the Muslim ummah at that time were
under poverty.
Yes. It took him almost 5 years to bring everyone to a good, like, average, above average right. level. But then after that, during the times of Imam al-Sadiq or Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, the Imams were fashionable and they were questioned for it too, and they're like, dude, it's like different times, you know?
Exactly.
But to an extent.
Exactly.
We always talk about how Islam is here to establish balance for us, right?
Definitely. Yeah. As far as your attention and your emphasis in life and all that you care and, you know, the core of your value system, as far as if this is shifted away from material life,
yes.
because there is no end to it.
Yes.
And something interesting about the material world is that once you buy that thing, the second moment, the second day, all that enthusiasm, all that glitter, it falls away.
Yes, exactly. And then you're filled with a deeper void.
Exactly.
It's horrible, and the cycle goes on.
Exactly.
And it reminds me of that hadith from Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, where his eminence says, this world and taking from this material world is like drinking seawater.
Mm.
The more you drink, the thirstier you get until
exactly.
you die.
Exactly.
It's scary.
It's very scary, but
That's all the time we have. The scarier part is that that's all the time we have. Thank you so very much for being with us on this episode. Thank you, Sister Razia.
Thank you.
Much more to be talked about on this discussion, so make sure to stay tuned. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Months into President Joe Biden's term, the United States has recorded 800,000 COVID-19 deaths, over 300,000 of those on his watch, the highest total and per capita of the group of seven wealthiest nations. We'll prepare for you an article written by Jeff Mason. The piece is titled, Experts Say Rising Cases, Omicron Highlight Holes in Biden's COVID Strategy. Amid a new surge in COVID-19 cases and deaths ahead of the Christmas and New Year holidays, US President Joe Biden is drawing criticism from health experts who are calling for more urgency, more testing, wearing of face masks, and global vaccine sharing. President Biden, a Democrat, took office in January, pledging to get the coronavirus under control. He presided over a massive vaccine rollout and passed a $1.9 trillion pandemic relief package, a sharp contrast with his predecessor, Republican Donald Trump, who downplayed the pandemic's severity, dismissed many preventive measures, and undermined health experts. However, 11 months into Joe Biden's term, the United States has recorded 800,000 COVID-19 deaths, over 300,000 of those on his watch, the highest total and per capita of the group of seven wealthiest nations. As the Omicron variant bursts down and people gather for the holiday season, hospitals in some areas are seeing record high numbers of COVID-19 patients. According to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, Biden's vaccination push has led to 65.2% of the eligible population being fully vaccinated. Republican-led opposition means that figure is less than 50% in some states. Less than 30% of the population has an additional booster shot believed necessary to protect against Omicron. Health experts are saying the U.S. administration needs to push mask wearing, increase pressure on companies to bring down the cost of tests, share technology on vaccines globally, and secure more funding to fight the pandemic on a broad scale. Many say the White House had let such measures slide while focusing on getting people inoculated. Greg Gonsalves, an associate professor of epidemiology at Yale University, said, "Where's the leadership that asks for national sacrifice at a time of emergency?" He said, "President Biden should get on television tonight and say, 'I want you to mask up.'" The White House has repeatedly claimed it has the tools to fight Omicron without shutting schools and businesses, while promising more tests and widespread booster distribution. Biden will speak in coming days about new plans, including driving home his message to unvaccinated Americans to get a shot, and for those who are vaccinated to get a booster shot. Broadway theaters, universities, and professional sports leagues are already cancelling or postponing events, reflecting the reality of a new COVID-19 wave. Biden's toughest challenge fighting the pandemic has been political. Misinformation spread through social media platforms and pushback on health measures, driven largely by Republican politicians and conservative media, have thwarted his efforts to persuade pockets of the U.S. population to get vaccinated. The Biden administration vowed early on to crack down on private companies spreading vaccine-related misinformation, but it persists. Dr. Peter Hotez, Dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine, says, "I think U.S. officials underestimated the fact that the anti-vaccine movement was first and foremost a political movement." He said a leading killer of young and middle-aged adults in the United States is anti-science aggression from the far right. The White House has sought to depoliticize the issue, sending health officials onto Fox News Channel, even as the cable channel's conservative commentators sowed doubt about vaccines and wearing of face masks. A White House official said despite their sometimes significant differences, the White House sees Fox News as an important outlet to disseminate public health information, including on Biden's Omicron strategy. The president has sparred with Republican governors whose policies clash with his. More recently, his rhetoric has been less political, focused directly on urging people to get a vaccine shot. On Thursday, 16th of December, he sounded a grim warning, predicting a winter of severe illness and death for those who are unvaccinated. Biden said earlier this month the government would require private health insurers to reimburse their 150 million customers for the cost of over-the-counter at-home COVID-19 tests, and make 50 million tests available free through rural clinics and health centers for the uninsured. But critics call that insufficient. Angela Rasmussen, an American virologist at the Vaccine and Infectious Disease Organization at the University of Saskatchewan in Canada, says, "There's more uninsured Americans than that, and what we were only supposed to take one rapid test ever. These policies are completely inadequate." Surging demand for COVID-19 tests from U.S. employers bringing employees back to work exacerbated a nationwide shortage of rapid tests in the fall, driving up costs for state and local testing programs. The recent spike in cases has led to long testing lines across the country and left Americans scrambling to secure at-home tests at pharmacies and online. The White House claimed there are tens of thousands of free testing sites across the country. The supply of at-home tests has quadrupled, and a dozen new rapid tests has been authorized to come to the market. A White House official claimed, "We're working with governors and state and local health officials to add more capacity. We're also working with manufacturers to expand capacity." Former director of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Tom Frieden, told Reuters news agency, "The administration also needs to step up the promotion of mask wearing, and that subsidizing the costs of face masks or distributing them could help." He said, "Masks and vaccination are by far the two most important interventions, and it's still far too hard for someone to find out the quality of a mask they're buying to get masks at a reasonable price. It's still too much of a wild west out there in terms of the market. The Omicron variant that is prolonging the global crisis may not be the last, as vast majorities of people in less developed nations remain unvaccinated, giving the virus room to mutate." Experts said the Biden administration could have done more to get vaccines to the rest of the world, protecting other populations and Americans as well. Noting the new Omicron variant came from abroad, Greg Gonsalves says, "There's been sort of an ongoing battle with the White House to do more." Meanwhile, top U.S. infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci has warned of a new high in the number of deaths over the latest variant of COVID-19, the Omicron variant. Dr. Fauci made the comments during an interview with CNN, in which he was asked whether he expected new record high numbers for cases as well as hospitalizations and deaths. Fauci confirmed by saying, "I think that is going to happen. We are going to see a significant stress in some regions of the country on the hospital system, particularly in those areas where you have a low level of vaccination, which is one of the reasons why we continue to stress the importance of getting those unvaccinated people vaccinated." He added that U.S. officials were aware of the possibility of a new variant, but did not expect it to have so many mutations. Dr. Anthony Fauci added, "We definitely saw variants coming. I think what one referred to, what was not anticipated, was the extent of the mutations and the amino acid substitutions in Omicron, which is really unprecedented." Anthony Fauci added, "It kind of came out of nowhere, where you have a virus that has 50 mutations, 30 of which are in the spike protein, and 10 or 12 of which are in the receptor binding domain. I mean, to me, that's really quite unprecedented." He further anticipated tough times for U.S. hospitals and the healthcare sector in the effort to handle the new variant of the coronavirus. Dr. Fauci said, "It is going to be tough. We can't walk away from that. We can't, because with Omicron that we're dealing with, it is going to be a tough few weeks to months as we get deeper into the winter." The Omicron variant, which was found in the U.S. earlier this month, is said to have a much higher transmissibility than the previous variants of the coronavirus. Dr. Fauci told NBC earlier, "Well, the one thing that's very clear, and there's no doubt about this, is its extraordinary capability of spreading, its transmissibility capability. It is just, raging through the world, really. Omicron was first detected in South Africa last month and soon spread across many countries, including in the Americas and in Europe. According to the World Health Organization, WHO, Omicron is expected to become the dominant version of the virus.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, types of people. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the types of people in the Islamic lifestyle, and these types of people that we are talking, it is in relation to the wealth, inshallah. We have seen in the narrations, and when we look at the verses of the Quran as well, and even the narration that we have from the Prophet, one of the narrations, in that the Prophet has said that the people are of three types. The first type of people is those who do not store money, who do not store wealth and properties. And what they do is they just earn to the amount which they need, and if they have extra, they spend it for the people and they give charity and alms. In the Quran, we have the wordings that yunfiquna amwalhum fi sabilillah. They spend their money in the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And for them, in the Quran, Allah has given the example that their example is that when they spend something, it is just like, you know, making something 70 times, you know, multiplying something to the 70 times. So the money which they spend in this world, the money which they spend in this world is being given them 70 times more in hereafter. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the types of people in accordance to the collecting or storing the wealth. So we said that the first type of people are those who spend money and who do not like to store money. The second type of people are those who like to store money, but obviously they spend it on their relatives. These people who do not obviously collect or store money unjustly, but it is according to the justice, but on the other hand, they love to spend for their relatives, for the brothers and sisters, for the poor people. So basically, the second category of people are those who store the money for their children, because if they go, they want to have something for their children as well. So basically, in this type of people, people should be aware of what they are storing, because it should not go towards the wastage, which is known as israf, because israf or wastage is one of the big sins. So therefore, those who likes to store money, they should look at the aspect of justice as well, that it should be in accordance to the justice, and they should spend it for the others as well. And the third category of people are those who has made this wealth and property their actual goal, and they're living a material life. And in the Quran, Allah has said that these are the worst people on the earth. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. for listening to A2Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The Limelight.
The only solution to the Afghan crisis, exacerbated by the refusal of the U.S. to release several billion dollars of Afghanistan's own funds, even on humanitarian grounds, similar to the economic terrorism of Washington against many countries, is the formation of an inclusive government as soon as possible. Dear listeners, what you heard was part of an article written by Kayhan International staff writer. This article is published under the heading All-Inclusive Government, Only Solution to Afghanistan's Problems. Stay tuned for more. A country freshly freed from foreign occupation, and that too from the tentacles of the world's topmost terrorist entity, the U.S., faces a myriad of problems and many years to recover. But if unity is absent and a militia concentrates power in its hands through the barrels of guns at the expense of all other ethnic, religious, and political groups that make that country a nation, then it will be called factional occupation with no guarantee for peace, stability, progress, and survival. This is the sorry state of Afghanistan at present. Since the Taliban that seized power in Kabul earlier this year, or was tacitly handed control by the Americans, seems unwilling to form a broad-based national unity government. This does not augur well for Afghanistan's future and even for the Taliban, which so far, despite the earnest advice of good neighborly Iran and the world countries, has not included any representative from the Tajik, Hazara, Uzbek, and other ethnic groups, as well as from Shia Muslims that make up over a quarter of the country's population. The Taliban are not even willing to share power with fellow Pashto speakers, many of whom do not agree with the ideology of the militant group. As a result, the current rulers of Afghanistan have failed to win political recognition by neighbors eager to help it recover from decades of destruction as well as from most world countries. The only solution to the crisis exacerbated by the refusal of the United States of America to release several billion dollars of Afghanistan's own funds, even on humanitarian grounds, similar to the economic terrorism of Washington against many countries such as the Islamic Republic of Iran, is the formation of an inclusive government as soon as possible. This was the gist of the speech delivered in Islamabad by Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian to the 17th Extraordinary Session of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC, Council of Foreign Ministers in the Pakistani capital recently. He said, "Sustainable security and political and social stability in Afghanistan are possible only through real collective participation and an inclusive and effective government in which all ethnicities and religious groups play a role." Iran's topmost diplomat, noting that the Islamic Republic has over the past 100 days delivered more than 13 humanitarian aid consignments to various cities of Afghanistan, pointed out in a brotherly manner to the participants, including the Taliban delegation from Kabul, that any delay in the formation of an inclusive government in Afghanistan will give the war-torn people's enemies the chance to activate an extensive network of social criminals through spreading the terrorism of Daesh, creating economic hardships and critical conditions in livelihood, healthcare, and basic needs of life. While presenting a four-point solution for resolving the crisis that included the release of Afghanistan's assets in foreign banks, he said, national reconciliation, national cohesion, and inclusive participation in government and governance, alongside the good faith and benevolent contribution of neighboring countries, as well as regional and Muslim states in the fight against terrorism, insecurity, and instability, in addition to providing humanitarian assistance, are the most urgent requirements for supporting Afghan people and guaranteeing a bright future for them. Hopefully, the friendly advices of Iran and other countries would be heeded in Kabul, and soon an inclusive government would be formed with the participation of all ethnic, religious, and political groups.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common. Besides defending geographical borders, martyrs defend religious, spiritual, and cultural borders.
This is part of the speech delivered on November 21st, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the officials in charge of conducting the Martyrs of Elam commemoration ceremony.
سبک زندگی اسلامی در رفتار رزمندگان ما و شهدای ما یه چیز برجسته است که نمی‌شود از این صرف نظر کرد واقعا.
The Islamic lifestyle seen in the behavior of our soldiers and martyrs is too important to be disregarded. There are so many inspirational points to be seen in the lives of the martyrs that our artists should truly portray an artistic picture of this for the whole world. They should introduce the Iranian soldiers to the world. They should place our soldiers in front of the eyes of the people throughout the world with their great artistic works. Well, the commemoration ceremony that you have organized should open our ears to the message of the martyrs. They tell us the martyrs are rejoicing for those who have not yet joined them, from those left behind them, that they will not have any fear, nor will they grieve. The Holy Quran, Surah 3, verse 170. This path is one that is free from any fear, worry, and concern, because it is the path of God. We should be steadfast on this path and move with strength. We should not falter on this path with the temptations of the enemies.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
ملت ایران با شنیدن پیام شهیدان باید اتحاد خود، اتفاق خود، انگیزه خود، تلاش خود رو بیشتر کنه. پیام شهیدان ما اینه.
The Iranian nation should increase its unity, solidarity, motivation and efforts when it hears the martyrs' message. This is the message of the martyrs to us. When hearing the message of the martyrs, the officials of the Islamic Republic should feel more responsible towards society and ensure security in the way the martyrs did. Everyone should feel responsible. And all of us should pay attention to this fact that no nation will get anywhere without diligence, struggling in the way of God and enduring hardships. If there are any hardships, enduring those hardships will help the Iranian nation reach the peak. Inshallah, God willing. I hope that God the Exalted will bestow success on all of you, that He will grant His mercy and forgiveness to the dear martyrs of Ilam and all the martyrs of the country, that He will associate our magnanimous Imam who opened this path to us and who brought guidance to the people of the country with His friends, with the great guides who have come throughout history, with the prophets and with the Imams, alayhim as-salam, and that He will bestow success on you as well. The subjects discussed by the gentlemen, the suggestions and requests they put forward, are primarily related to the executive organizations. These should be submitted to them, but I will ask them to pursue the matter. You too should pursue the matter as well. I will do the same. May God's greetings, mercy and blessings be upon you.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The sights and smells of home, from Palestinian traditional clothes to signature Palestinian dishes. Roughly 6 million Palestinians live in exile after 73 years of illegal Israeli occupation, which denies them the right to return.
Events like this bring together Palestinians from all walks of life, but the main target is the younger generation.
It's very important to bring my children to an event like this, to learn more about Palestine, about the struggle of the Palestinian people. Myself, I was born in a refugee camp in the Gaza Strip. They were born in Britain. they probably have no connection with Palestine whatsoever. So it's very important that we bring our kids to these events to learn more about the struggle of their own people.
The public isn't really educated about the occupation that's going on in Palestine, and they kind of think just because it's going on for so long that it's something that's normal and dismissed, whereas events like this show us that it's not normal and we should fight for what we believe in.
It can never be just about art and culture. The festival, like the ones before, was also unapologetically political. The organizers called once again on the international community to end the occupation of Palestine. Former leader of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, was there to offer his support as well.
Nobody ever chooses to be a refugee. Nobody ever wants to leave their home, their community, their family, their place of birth, possibly never to return. They don't do it for fun. They do it out of desperation.
We asked Mr. Corbyn about the new Borders and Nationality Bill, which is being described as the most racist legislation in decades and could harm those seeking asylum in the UK.
Oppose the Borders and Nationality Bill. It's brutal, it's unnecessary, and it's demonising people who are desperate. Nobody gets into a boat to cross the English Channel unless they're really desperate. They are desperate people who end up on the shores of this country. They should be supported, they should be housed, they should be welcomed, because they're people fleeing from poverty, from oppression, and from environmental degradation.
The former Labour leader, who represents a growing number of British citizens and politicians that support the Palestinian cause, has been a figurehead of the resistance for decades, bringing hope to young Palestinians who dream of returning to their homeland. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Israeli military intelligence chief Tamir Heyman has admitted in an interview that Tel Aviv was involved in the January 2020 assassination of Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, in a drone strike that also killed deputy chief of Iraq's popular mobilization unit, Abu Mehdi al-Muhandis, at Baghdad airport. The headline, however, didn't come as a surprise given initial reports on the role of informants in tipping the CIA about the whereabouts of the Iranian general on the day of the U.S. drone strike. It's not the first time Israel has been involved in such operations against Iran either. The regime assassinated four Iranian scientists between 2010 and 2012. In November last year, Iran's top nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was assassinated in an attack that Iran says has Israel's fingerprints all over it. Tehran also points its finger at Tel Aviv for multiple sabotage attacks that have recently hit Iran's nuclear facilities in an abortive attempt to undermine the country's nuclear program. Despite Iran's repeated calls on the international community to hold the perpetrators responsible for the dangerous adventurism, neither the United Nations nor self-proclaimed promoters of human rights in the West have called for accountability or made any meaningful attempt to prevent similar attacks. That's also true about Israel's military action on nations like Syria and the regime's atrocities against the people of Palestine, all of which are considered as blatant violation of international law.
Because of the protection of the United States in the United Nations Security Council, flat out, this is what enables Israel to perpetuate its rogue activity regionally and globally, to perpetuate its terrorism, to perpetuate its ethnic cleansing and genocide against the Palestinian people, to continually bomb neighboring countries almost daily. It is the protection of the United States in the United Nations that enables Israel to act in this continually terroristic and scoff-law manner.
That begs the question, wouldn't the lack of international accountability legitimize Israel's state terrorism and embolden the regime to intensify its aggression?
The seventh round of the Vienna talks wrapped up on Friday with modest gains, and the negotiating teams are back home for a recess. Iran, China, Russia, France, Germany and the UK, plus the US, which is participating indirectly, have held multiple rounds of talks to revive the 2015 deal, which the US abandoned in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran. The sides are now working to reach an agreement on a joint text that would promise the removal of anti-Iran sanctions, the US's re-entry to the deal, and Iran's return to full compliance to the accord.
We have reached two agreed texts, which are the result of intensive rounds of talks over the past days in Vienna. The new texts incorporate Iran's positions in the previous discussions with the proposals of the new Iranian government. These texts lay the basis for moving the talks forward in the upcoming dialogues.
Tehran says in the first place it wants all sanctions imposed as part of the U.S.'s so-called maximum pressure campaign removed in a verifiable manner. Also, there must be a guarantee that the U.S. will not renege on the accord again. This seems to be a major roadblock, as the U.S. regards Iran's demands as maximalist. Tehran says its demands are nothing but its rights under the 2015 deal. Iran's foreign ministry described the U.S. behavior as, quote, symptoms of Alzheimer's, as it has forgotten the terms of the pact.
The U.S. must have forgotten that it was the one that arrogantly left the deal. When Mr. Trump discarded the accord and even threatened to punish any country that would keep its ties with Iran, so Washington is responsible for the current problems in the JCPOA, and if it wants to win the ticket back to the accord, the shortest possible path is to remove the sanction it's illegally imposed on Iran in a verifiable manner.
Iran and the P4 Plus One started the Vienna talks in April this year, during the previous Iranian government. The sixth round of the talks was the last in the Rouhani administration, and the seventh round began after a five-month hiatus, as Iran was forming its new team in the new Iranian administration.
The new Iranian negotiating team shares the same stance as the previous one. Iran wants all sanctions to be removed. Period. While there's still resistance on the part of the U.S. to accept Iran's demands, the negotiating parties are hopeful that in the next round of talks, a common ground can be reached. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The largest international gathering on Afghanistan since the U.S. left the country in a chaotic situation. The extraordinary meeting of the OIC foreign ministers was convened in Islamabad to discuss the humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan. The meeting was attended by not just the OIC states, but permanent members of the UN Security Council, representatives of the UN agencies, and the international financial institutions. Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan called for the immediate help for the people of Afghanistan.
The point is that if the world does not act, this will be the biggest man-made crisis which is unfolding in front of us. We, the OIC, it's a big responsibility on us, because not only is it the situation in Afghanistan as it unfolds, but it's a religious duty to help them.
The UN Under Secretary General on Humanitarian Affairs presented a grim picture of the Afghan situation.
Basic services that all Afghans depend on are collapsing as international development support, upon which the country has depended for so long, has frozen up. By the middle of next year, as estimated by UNDP, universal poverty may reach 97%.
The Iranian foreign minister proposed the establishment of a special fund to help the people of Afghanistan. He also called for the national reconciliation and inclusive government in Afghanistan. This was the second extraordinary meeting of the OIC on Afghanistan. The first one was also held in Islamabad 41 years ago, but the agenda at that time was to penalize the Soviet-backed regime in Kabul.
The meeting of the OIC foreign ministers came against the backdrop of worsening humanitarian situation in Afghanistan. According to the United Nations, nearly 23 million Afghans are facing acute food shortage. 97% of Afghan population could slip below the poverty line by June next year if urgent steps are not taken to mitigate their sufferings.
The acting Afghan foreign minister was also invited to the meeting. Officials say at this stage the priority is to avert the humanitarian crisis, and the question of recognition of the Taliban rule will come later. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
anger was vented outside Downing Street Sunday as Britain's ethnic minorities demanded the government scrap the controversial new Nationality and Border Bill. The bill gifts the state new powers to remove citizenship without warning or a proper appeal process. Black, Asian, and immigrant families are all expected to be targeted disproportionately by the new law change, sending fear ricocheting through communities.
Basically, what they're saying is that all that we've been working for as organizations, as gender-